Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for another week. We've got that kind of lull period between things that are going on. This is where we always like to remind the fans of all the things that are still happening. And we got the franchise tag being potentially applied today to teams who decide to do that. And we're going to start already looking to combine and things like that. So we use Scott here to remind us of all the things still happening this time of year for fans. Yes, exactly. That for fans who are sad the Super Bowl is over and we're in that lull period. Still tons going on, so we want to hear your thoughts, questions, comments, all of that. Send that in on Twitter using hashtag BucksLive. So to start out with, we wanted to get into the franchise tag a little bit and talk about why that gets applied, how that gets applied, and then also obviously hear if you think that is something that we might potentially do.
Well, yeah, the franchise tag today was the beginning of a two-week window where teams can do a franchise tag or a transition tag. And generally about 10 teams on average a league do, or 10 teams per year on average do it. I think there were nine last year. There's three types, and if I got too much into it, it'd be boring. But there's the exclusive franchise tag, which means if you get that tag, you can't negotiate with other teams. There's a non-exclusive franchise tag, which is pretty much the same deal, except you can negotiate with other teams. But if you were to have a player signed away, you get two first-round draft picks as compensation. So that, I don't know if that's ever happened, but it certainly would be rare. I could see it conceivably happening if, say, it was like a quarterback. Or let's look at one of the ones. There's a player, the Steelers, that people are guessing they'll franchise tag Le'Veon Bell, right? Mm-hmm. There's a decent chance. If you were picking late in the first round this year, would you consider maybe giving up two first-round picks for Le'Veon Bell? You might.
You might.
For a guy like that. Now, I don't mean us. We're not tampering
right,
here.
Yeah.
I just mean theoretically. And then there's the transition tag, which they can also negotiate, and the money they get paid is a little bit less. So that's sometimes used as well. But the problem there is you don't get any compensation at all if they're signed away. So you would only do that if you felt pretty sure that, you know, they weren't going to be signed away by somebody
right.
else. So. And, you know, this all came from the new CBA that created unrestricted free agency in 1993, which was way overdue, something the players definitely deserved. But the teams is sort of, you know, it's a bargaining thing. So the teams were willing to give up for free agency, but in return they wanted some way. Back then it was thought, the player that was always used as an example is John Elway. Like, shouldn't the Broncos have some extra way to try to keep John Elway a Bronco for life?
Right.
And so they created this franchise tag, which basically meant this is – to be applied to a franchise-type player. That's not really what it's used for today. As you can see, there's been about 10 kickers that have been franchised in the last 5 years. So clearly, it's not really being used that way. Really, the main point of a franchise tag for a team, in addition to not losing that guy, it's basically extending a contract negotiation time. So you saw nine guys get the tag last year. Four of them had new long-term deals by the time the season started.
That's pretty interesting. So what is it your thought about how likely or not the Bucs are to use that?
I don't think it's very likely this year, and we haven't used one since 2000. We used one on Connor Barth, like 2012, something like that. We've only used it four times ever. We used it the very first year that we could on Paul Gruber, which led to a little bit of a contract negotiation situation, and he missed some games, but they did get a deal done. Subsequently used it on Chidi Ahanotu, and then on Antonio Bryant in 2009 after he had this huge comeback 2008 season, but he hurt his knee, and really that was about it for him. He never had much more of a career after that. So it is a bit of a crapshoot because it carries with it such a high salary number.
Mm.
If you're a quarterback this year that gets the franchise tag, is probably going to get about $21 million.
Wow.
A defensive end would get about $17 million. We talked about this last year with Doug Martin. We didn't think he would get tagged because the running back figure is about $12 or $13 million. That's a lot to pay for a running back.
That is a lot.
So I'm looking at we have a lot. On one hand, you look and go, wow, we got 17 free agents, and surely we'll want to bring some of them back. And general manager Jason Light has said something to that effect. So I think they will make an effort to bring some guys back. And so it would be nice if there was one guy you didn't have to worry about leaving. It makes that list a little bit shorter. But I don't look at that list. When I look at that list, I don't really see somebody that screams out as a guy that would probably get a tag. I think a lot of people are identifying William Golston as maybe the guy that should be our top priority on that list. He's a defensive end, so his franchise tag number would be $17 million. And that number is through the roof because – of the players that get huge contracts at that position, and you know what they are? They're the sack guys.
Right.
The guys that are going to give you double-digit sacks are the ones that get the huge defensive end contracts and drive that number up. William Golston is a great player. We saw how important he was last year, and he seems to be getting better every year, but he's not a guy that's ever gotten close to double-digit sacks. So it doesn't seem like that's a fit.
Okay, that makes sense.
I don't think there's anybody on that list that I would anticipate getting the tag. So we got 2 weeks to think about it, but I kind of doubt it.
So would you agree with people saying that you think that he might be one of the top priorities or the top priority to re-sign?
Yeah, I think he's up there. After seeing what Jacquizz Rodgers did last year, it'd be nice to get him back. Both of your starting safeties for the first three quarters of the season until Keith Tandy took over are on that list. So there's something to be figured out there. If you don't sign them, then that obviously becomes something of a priority in free agency in the draft. And there's a lot of decent role players on that list that have given you good depth. And if you lose a lot of that, then you have to find depth. You have to replace it. So right. A lot of teams like to make an effort to re-sign those guys because they're a known commodity. You know, we know what Joe Holly is, and we know what Akeem Spence is, and they know our systems. If we have to replace them with some other free agent, then you're kind of starting over a little bit.
So it seems like they would have to be significantly better on paper to make it worth having to do the starting over
right,
idea.
Exactly. And maybe that'll happen at a couple positions. But I do think that the Buccaneers will make an effort to bring back a good portion of those 17 unrestricted free agents.
Yeah. And we've also had some coaching changes and some staff changes, which is always an interesting storyline here at this time of year. So what are some of the key changes that fans would know about and care about?
Well, the important thing to keep in mind is we do have very good coaching staff continuity this year. I mean, our coordinators remain in place. We were so ecstatic when Mike Smith resigned, right? It's just like Dirk always talks about how a team's roster is probably going to be about a third different every season. Your coaching staff tends to get tweaked here and there during almost every offseason, and started this year when John Embry left to become part of Kyle Shanahan's staff in San Francisco. And so Ben Steele, this is great. He was already on the staff as an offensive assistant. He gets promoted, so it's always nice when guys get promoted from within. And sometimes that causes a little bit of a domino effect. Zach Grossi, who was Dirk's assistant, is now going to be, and had previously been working in scouting, is now going to be an offensive assistant. And somebody has to replace Zach, so now you have Anthony Perkins coming in to be Cutter's assistant. And we also hired, I had to write some of this down because
so many people.
We hired Kyler Fulton, who's been with us a little bit in camp and a little bit at the end of last year as an offensive assistant. And Danny Breyer, who was working in analytics last year, is now a defensive assistant. So a lot of moving parts. And one other guy, it's not on the coaching staff, but I find it interesting for a couple reasons. Alex Smith, who used to play tight end for us, was a third round pick in 2005, has joined the staff as a pro scout.
Which is going to be so cool. And like, I love that whenever you get to bring in former players and stuff, that's always a bonus to be able to be part of staff. And so some of those job descriptions, I think some fans might even be a little bit confused about some of those coaching roles. They hear about coordinators and position coaches, mm-hmm. and then you hear things like offensive assistant or whatever. Give some clarity
those
to what those
guys,
are.
Offensive assistants tend to be guys that they're support. They're helping with the coaching, and they don't have a specific position, or sometimes they do, but it's not in the title. They work with a particular coach, and they just help with the coaching on the practice field for the most part. And the quality control guys do a lot of breaking down a film and providing information to the other coaching staff. So they're very much support for the coaching staff in general, and that's a springboard position. That's the way a young guy gets in a lot. I mean, you said it yourself. What does a defensive quality control coach do? You know, these guys, maybe Buck fans haven't heard of a Skylar Fulton or Danny Breyer, but you know who was a defensive quality control coach on our 2002 staff?
Who?
Raheem Morris. You know who he is now.
Now you know.
Yeah, big shocks and gasps back there. You know who was whose first career job in the NFL was an offensive quality control here on John Gruden's staff? Kyle Shanahan. Now he's a head coach. I mean, they got to start somewhere.
They do start somewhere.
I'm not telling you for sure you're gonna hear Skylar Fulton and Danny Breyer and 10 or 15 years being head coaches, but you never know.
You never know. That's always a good thing to keep
track
of. All right, we're going
to
talk a little bit more about what's going on this time of year and what you can be paying attention to leading up to free agency and draft and combine and all of that, so stick with us. And you can keep sending in all of those thoughts, comments, questions, everything on Twitter. Use the hashtag BucksLive. We'll get to those in the final segment, so stay with us. We got a couple-minute break, and we'll be right back.
downfield. He's going to run with the ball. He's going to hurdle.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We are going to continue on here, and we're going to get to your Twitter questions in the final segment, so you can keep sending those in. Use the hashtag BucksLive. Right now, we wanted to get into a little bit more of the what's coming up next, and a lot of our scouts have been in the building this week, which is not normal. They are normally out scouting.
Right.
So what has brought them back in right now, and what's kind of happening on the front office side of things in the NFL at this time?
Meetings. So scouts... college scouts spend all of the fall, of course, on the road, right? Going to one school after another. When they get after the season, then they go to, like, all-star games, like the Senior Bowl and East-West Shrine Game and things like that. But then they also have a lot of times when they come here and they have long planning and scouting meetings. So they're watching film together and scouting players, but they're also planning for things like the combine. So when they get to the combine – you know, everybody sees on TV the players running the 40-yard dashes, and that's all important and stuff. But the more important part of that, according to them, every year they say this, is the interviews they get to do with the players at night and the medical examinations. So you're asking about the scouts. They obviously are trainers and so on are preparing for the combine as well, which starts right at the beginning of March. And the scouts are going to be interviewing hundreds of guys. Some of them just kind of informally while they're milling around in the hotel lobby that they stay in, and some of them during the nightly rotations where every 15 minutes you get a 15-minute interview and every 15 minutes it changes. And so you go do that for like 3 or 4 hours. You plow through 12 or 16 interviews a night. And so you have to be very prepared because there's some guys where they have specific things that you want to find out about it. Lots of times you actually know what the truth is, but you want to see what they say and how they handle it. And so it's something you have to be very prepared for in order to get the most value out of the combine as possible. And of course, all between now and the draft, there's all kinds of meetings with the scouts and the general manager and everybody and the coaches actually watching film and breaking down guys and informing their draft board.
And so this time of year, I mean, how much of the decisions are really being made right now? How quickly and close to the draft do you get before you already know as much as what you're really looking for?
You know, I think I think Jason and Dirk, who are really the ones who are going to decide, I think they probably already have some ideas of guys they would like. But your draft board does move up and down a little bit, and you can't afford to get locked in on anything right now because you may make decisions in free agency that change your priorities a little bit, and you may see things at the combine in terms of either their performance or medical stuff or something you find out in an interview that changes your board. So the board is sort of a fluid thing right now. We've had good fortune in a couple recent years to be given a little bit of access to some of that preparation. And you can see that, you know, they start to hone in on some guys and some ideas, but it's definitely not decided yet. As an example, when we drafted Ali Marpet in 2015, they had kind of started to like him at the Senior Bowl. They really fell in love with him at the combine. And as you know, by the time we got to the draft, he was important enough to them that they actually traded up to make sure they didn't miss him. So that was sort of how that process went.
And so you mentioned the draft board, and all these mock drafts are starting to come out, which we always
love.
Which are
great.
They're fun, even if you know that you look back and no one got anything right. They're always fun. But you mentioned that it looks a little bit different this year in particular when it comes to the Bucs as maybe some other years past when – they're just all over the place?
This is a good thing, obviously, because the main reason that it's harder to predict for the Buccaneers right now is we're picking 19th and not 7th or 1st, or we were slotted 9th but ended up picking 11th in the last 3 years. And it's a little easier when there's less variables in front of you to pinpoint what the Bucs would do. In addition to the fact that the overall roster depth is better right now, obviously the team's better. We went 9-7 instead of 6-10 or 2-14. So the team has steadily gotten better. So it isn't like there's one specific glaring need that's so much more obvious than the rest. You can plan a little bit for the future, potentially. You could take a guy that you don't necessarily know is going to start his first year, which really wasn't the case the last three picks. You know, Jameis Winston, or Mike Evans in 2014, Jameis Winston in 15, and Vernon Hargreaves in 16. I think each one of those players was the main player being predicted to go to the Buccaneers that year, and it turned out to be true, and they were all expected to start right away, which also turned out to be true. It's a totally different situation this year.
So do you think it is primarily because of the fact that there are just so many teams picking in front of us, or that there's not necessarily one thing people are picking with the Bucs? Do you think it's both?
It's a combination to the point where, like, you could say, I think fairly, that defensive tackle is a position we might need some help at, especially if Akeem Spence and or William Golston and or John Hughes and or Silver Slee and all the guys on our free agency list leave, then you could say defensive tackle might be a position of need. But it's not necessarily like if we don't draft one, we're in trouble.
Right.
You know, we really needed a receiver when we drafted Mike Evans and obviously Jameis Winston. You know, that we really needed a franchise quarterback. Last year, we clearly, everybody knew it from the beginning, we clearly needed help at cornerback and defensive end, and we hit both those positions in both free agency and the first two rounds of the draft. This year, I think the one position I hear the most agreement on where the Bucs could use some help is as another dynamic receiver to pair with Mike Evans, and I tend to agree with that. I tend to think the type of player that Dirk was describing at the end of the season that can get you yards after the catch and can turn smaller plays into explosive plays is really what this offense needs, and that could be a receiver. But even then, when you're picking 19th in the first round, you might have better value at an offensive lineman or a defensive tackle or another pass rusher, knowing that there's enough depth that you can find good receivers in the second and third round. It happens every year. The Saints got Michael Thomas in the third round this past year, and he ended up being one of the best rookie receivers in the league, if not the best. So that's why it's so tough. And, you know, we always do a roundup on our – I think Joe Kenya puts it together at every Monday of all the mock drafts of that the week and updating them. And this week's had 11 different mock drafts referenced, and they had 10 different players picked.
It's incredible.
So – and 10 of the 10 national ones, the other one was the Pewter Report, had different players. So there was – I mean, there was defensive ends, tight ends, cornerbacks, running backs, and only one of them picked wide receiver. John Ross from Washington. So
that's
interesting. All over the board.
So do you see there being, again, that consistency of both free agency and draft addressing the same position, or because there's not as much of a glaring need, it could be more spread out?
I do not think that it is set up the same way that we need to necessarily do that like we did last year. But I would say that you shouldn't draw any conclusions. If the Buccaneers were to sign what you might expect to be a starting wide receiver, and we can't really name names right now,
right,
but fans can figure out the candidates out there. Even if the Bucs were to get one of those fairly high-profile wide receivers, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't draft another receiver, because you can have a guy you know is going to slot in right away and have another guy that you're preparing for the future.
That's true. So you think it wouldn't mean anything one way or the other?
It wouldn't take anything off our board, but I don't think we're necessarily going to double up like we did last year with Ayers and Spence and Grimes and Hargreaves.
Because there's just not quite the glaring
needs
and everything.
Not quite the glaring.
That makes sense. All right, well, we are going to come back for one more segment. That's going to be getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use the hashtag BucsLive. You can send them in throughout this break and continue to send them in throughout the next segment. We'll be checking them as it goes on. So send those again using hashtag BucsLive. We'll be right back after this.
Weston steps up out of the pocket. Looks downfield. Looks downfield. He's going to run with the ball. He's going to hurdle. He has a great
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and it is time for us to take your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Our first one comes from Darren. He says, I believe the Bucks have a 75% chance of re-signing Golston. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I might go a little bit higher.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think, boy, I wouldn't want to speak for him, but he seems happy here, you know, and the Buccaneers, I think the Buccaneers will be motivated to bring him back. So, yeah, I think the chances are pretty high.
Pretty high on that. Yeah. All
I
right.
mean, if you choose, if you got 17 guys and you decide one of them is the priority, I think you're probably going to find a way to get it done.
Yeah, that's
and that,
true.
Now, that's our conjecture that he's a priority, but it does seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Our next one comes from Philip, and he says, what is the latest with Doug Martin? Will he be back?
Well, we don't really have any latest right now. You know, you couldn't even make roster moves until the Monday after the Super Bowl, and there have been very few around the league. You don't see a lot of activity between now and when you get really close to free agency. So, and there's been no news or anything out of our building that anything will happen with Doug, so we don't really have any update on that.
Nolan asks, when is it decided who plays in London, and will there be a Mexico City game again, and if so, how are those teams decided?
Do you know the answer to the Mexico City part?
No, I do not know the answer to that
one.
We
should be hearing the London stuff. Hmm?
Patriots, Raiders already.
That one's already been, apparently.
For Mexico City.
Patriots, Raiders. That makes sense. I would think the Raiders probably have more fans more fans in Mexico who would root for the Raiders than a lot of teams on the East Coast, and fans that might go down to the game. So I'm sure they try to get a West Coast team in there all the time. I think the Raiders have already done that. Haven't they already been to Mexico City? Yeah. The London games we should be hearing about pretty soon. And how is it decided? The league just decides. You know, I'm sure there are some teams that would like to not go. Actually, I think a lot of teams would like to not go because coaching staffs are usually pretty set in their ways and they don't like that kind of extra
messing with the routine.
But we've done it twice and it's been fun. I think there's probably some effort to spread it around a little bit.
So you don't send the same team over and over again. Mike wants to know, do you believe that it will be a high priority to keep Humphreys and Brait based on how they've been playing so far?
Well, yes, but it's not an issue. They're exclusive rights free agents. So as long as the Buccaneers extend them a tender offer, which they will, they don't have any other option but to sign that option, to sign that and keep playing. And then they play on that one-year tender, and then they become restricted free agents the next year, and it's still hard to lose them if you're motivated to keep them at that point. So we should have at least two more years of those guys in the building regardless. And, yeah, if they were unrestricted free agents, I think they would be high-priority guys. And, you know, I don't really want to rank one over the other, but finding a productive tight end isn't that easy to do. And with Brandon Myers also an unrestricted free agent right now, you might be getting a little bit thin there if you didn't, especially in terms of pass-catching tight ends. So I would think he would be a priority, and he is a priority, but there's no real danger of losing him. So,
okay. Champ says, what do you guys think the team will be looking for more in this offseason when it turns to offense, either O-linemen or more of the, and he puts it as playmakers, running back, wide receiver, tight end?
In terms of immediate impact, the latter, the playmakers, what you might call skill position players. And, again, I keep referencing the same thing, but Dirk Cutter, who isn't always necessarily looking to volunteer information, as a lot of coaches are like that, did make a point of saying, agreeing completely during his final press conference after the end of the season, that, yes, we need more explosive playmakers on this offense. It's just a thing that has to happen, and you're not going to volunteer that information if you're not also going to make that an off-season priority.
Okay.
If you're going to tell the media members that are sitting here, is like, we definitely need to get more playmakers, and then you don't do anything at all to try to solve that situation, then you're really opening yourself up for a lot of criticism.
That's true. That's
I don't think coaches are going to put themselves in that position. So I'm sure at that point, he and Jason Light have probably already spoken about, okay, when we get to this offseason, this is something we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the offensive line, to me, is something you're always in the process of developing. We have done a good job over the last couple of years of turning the depth behind the starters from a bunch of untested guys who had hardly played at all to pretty good experienced depth, and or guys like Caleb Benenach, who you drafted, who you think you have a chance to develop. So, you know, we had, after we signed J.R. Sweezy, and that didn't really work out yet, although it still can, we had the potential of the depth of that line being Kevin Pamphill, Gazer Sherilis, Evan Smith. All those guys were guys we already knew could play. And then that became important when Sweezy couldn't play and Pamphill stepped right in. So you are constantly developing those guys, and I wouldn't put it past us to try to use a high pick on an offensive lineman anywhere along the offensive line, and or sign somebody in free agency for depth issues like we did with Sweezy and like we did with Evan Smith and so on.
Okay, and then we had a question from John who said, if I want to watch the combine in a way that will help me know who would be a good pick, what should I watch?
Well, you really don't have a ton of options. I will be self-serving here and say watch Buccaneers.com because we're going to be there, and Scott, our producer, is going with us, and we're going to try to bring you as much information from there that is Buccaneers-specific as we can. So if you're talking about that, I would hope you would find our information useful. Obviously, we're not going to have Jason Light on any of our interviews. We are going to talk to him, I would hope, he's not going to say, well, we're definitely picking this.
Right, yeah.
But you might be able to get some information about where they think the draft is stronger and what our priorities might be. But then otherwise, your choices are just whatever they choose to show on NFL Network, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really all you can see.
That's very true.
So
Doug says, I was watching the vote for the play of the year on the website, and it's down to a couple options. Wanted to hear what your favorite play of the year was.
Well, considering it was voted the play of the entire NFL season, or it was the catch mm-hmm. or the play? Mike Evans'
I guess
catch?
The catch would technically, yeah.
That was the play of the year, right? Wasn't that voted play of the year
mm-hmm.
at their honors,
yep.
at the NFL honors? Yeah, Mike Evans' catch where he spins and makes a ridiculous one-handed catch and then somehow manages to hold on while getting absolutely leveled. That's hard to beat. Obviously,
yep.
I assume the second one in the running is the one where Jameis Winston scrambled
yep.
around all the way back to the goal line.
Yep.
That one was more entertaining because it lasted for about 76 hours, and you're
yeah.
like, no, oh, it's going to be a safety. Wait, he's throwing
yeah.
it, and then an amazing catch down the field. That one was a more entertaining play, but just from sheer amazingness, if that's a word, I'd have to go with Mike Evans.
Sure, we'll
catch.
Go with that. I like that. All right, our last question is, do you think deep throws – are going to be improved because of the draft pick or just continued chemistry?
Well, I mean, it would to be the first half of the answer, we'd have to presume that the draft pick is a running
right.
back and a deep threat. I'm not sure I'm even necessarily talking about just a playing go deep type of deep threat when I'm talking about explosive playmaker. So more likely it's just Jameis Winston's continued development. That I would say that's one area of the game where we haven't got the results that we've expected. But we know from Jameis Winston that when there's something not perfect in his game, he pinpoints it and works very hard to make it better.
That's true. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. We'll see you next week. Keep sending those questions in. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll see you then.